hell that I was in, I'd do anything to be better.
I thought like a lunatic.
You kind of just have like that little bit of hope that it will get better.
You're gonna make it.
This began my surrender.
I am a witness of my own growth.
It's a life beyond your wildest dreams, and I just have to say, it works if you work it.
My story, that's what I share.
You're listening to Far From Finished, a weekly podcast where we share new, real-life stories of hope and triumph, told by the people who live them. Today's story comes to us from...
I am Patrick. I'm a drug addict and alcoholic from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 23 years old. I'm currently working on 154 days of sobriety. My childhood when I was growing up was... I mean, it's normal in modern terms. I come from a divorced home. My parents got divorced when I was 8. My dad's an excellent chef and owns a business. My mom is a teacher. The only thing I really remember when I was, you know, real young was my parents fighting a lot. And then eventually they got divorced. And right after that, my mom got married to some guy who was now my ex-stepdad. And my dad, that was the first time I ever seen a grown man cry. So I remember that pretty vividly. Other than that, though, I mean, my childhood was nice. You know, I lived in a condominium in a country club, you know. My dad, he's not rich, but I mean, he did okay for himself. I didn't really live with my mom, you know. I chose to live with my dad. I was just always felt like I was closer to him. Plus, I didn't really like the guy that my mom was married to at the time, so I really tried to stay away from there. Growing up, I really didn't fit in anywhere. I always tried to be whoever else, you know, you wanted me to be. I didn't really know who I was as a person when I was growing up. I definitely was gifted in smarts, but at one point I remember like I was in like sixth grade and I decided that I was going to be cool instead of being smart. I really decided that, you know. I think I was in like a history class and I was like, I want people to like me. So I started, you know, being the class clown and acting out and listening to rap music and being somebody that I wasn't really meant to be, but it was working for me because, you know, I started to get girls and I started to have more and more friends, you know. And that just kind of progressed. Like, I put athletics and being cool in front of my education and, you know, being a good student, or even a good person. And at that point, whenever I entered high school, was when drugs really kicked in for me. I remember the first time I ever did drugs was I was in my buddy's car, and we're on the way to a Friday night football game, and he has a Vicodin, and he's like, "Do you want to snort this Vicodin?" And I'm like, "I mean, I guess." I didn't know what was about to happen, but I snorted it, and I immediately proceed to go to the game, and I ask 150 people for a dollar, and they each gave me a dollar, and I walked away with 150 bucks. So I felt like I just was given a superpower of convincing people to do whatever I wanted them to do, and that was my first real shot at manipulation. You know, I could see how I could manipulate people into doing whatever I wanted them to do. And that's one of my biggest problems. I was a master manipulator. I could dope fiend the hell out of anybody for anything that I wanted as long as I saw a benefit to me. And I didn't care who you were or what you were about because all I wanted was the next one. And that was the time whenever sports became less important and the streets became my life, really. I lived in a pretty middle-class area in the suburbs, but right next to it was the ghetto. You know, it was the hardcore streets, like AK-47s and local rappers gunning at each other. There was these two rappers, they were brothers, and they used to shoot each other's house up. And, you know, I'm serious. We used to hang out with them, you know, and they would be slinging crack or... What was big in my time, at least with my generation right now, was pills, you know. That was the big thing. That was the big ticket item. And I met this woman, and she had, you know, oxycodone 30s, and that was like the big money, you know. And I always wanted to be a drug dealer because that's what my, I guess, culture idolized in some kind of way. Like, that was the cool thing to do because you get the fresh clothes, the fresh shoes, you know, all the designer gear, and that's all I cared about. Was being cool, having the nicest shit, and having some money in my pocket, you know? And that's how it started. That's how it really started for me, was selling drugs and, not really pretending to be something I wasn't, but acting a different kind of way, like I was from the streets, when really I'm just from a white middle class suburban area. You know, it made me become something that I wasn't. I was going outside of myself to bring something else into me. You know, that's the lifestyle I wanted to live, and I chose to live. And things were real different at first in my drug use. You know, I was doing drugs, but at the same time I was making money, and that's when things were all fun and games, and that's what I tried to chase after for the next 7 years of my life. You know, that first time whenever I felt all warm, and when I felt like drugs made me cool and made me more outgoing and allowed me to get the women and act the way I wanted to act, that's what drugs did for me. I used to sit there and sell right out of my dad's house, out of his restaurant. You know, no disregard for how he felt or what legal implications would happen if I was ever caught. I didn't care, you know. I didn't even think about it. That's how blinded I was. And this is when my addiction, like, was really starting to kick my ass. Because I don't know if anybody knows about oxycodone 30s, but you continue to do them, you're eventually going to get really sick, you know, when you don't have them. So this lady cuts me off, and I got dope sick for the first time. And oh my God, I was stuck in my bed. You know, I had tunnel vision. I'm sweating. I'm throwing up. I'm feeling just like the worst I ever felt in my whole life. And the thing was, is I knew what would make me feel better. You know, I knew that if I got another Oxy 30, I would feel better. But I didn't realize I'd only feel better for that day or for that moment. So that's exactly what I did. Is the next 3 years of my life, I went from oxys to not being dope sick to just being sicker than I was the day before every single day, you know. Every single day, I was struggling just to find the next one. Stealing from my mom, from my dad, from my brother and sister, taking things from my grandparents, you know. No disregard for human life or material things that belong to other people, not me, you know. And I was fortunate enough in my youth not to get in trouble like that. You know, but that shit didn't stay that way. The worst things got, I decided to switch it up, and I went for Suboxone. So the first time I tried to get clean, and the Suboxone got me off the oxys, but I just got addicted to the Suboxone. You know, I wasn't aware of a program. I wasn't aware of NA or AA. I didn't even know what they were about. Had no concept of them. So I'm trying to constantly replace drugs with other drugs, hoping that I don't even know what I was hoping, man. I was just trying to stay high and, you know, have a good time. But that, it wasn't working out that way, you know. And then I'm like 19, and I get into Xanax bars for the first time, like really, really hardcore. And I'm not aware that if you drink alcohol while you take Xanax, you're probably going to black out. So I'm going to a party, and I take like 3 or 4 bars, and I start drinking, and I don't remember anything. Nothing at all. I remember waking up the next day, and I find my phone, and I don't have my wallet or my keys, and I walk up the stairs, and there's my keys, and I walk outside, and there's my wallet, you know. And at that point, it's still fun and games, because I was like, oh, you know, it was like a joke. Like, I did Xanax, and I lost all my shit. You know what I mean? And then I found it repeatedly, one after another, you know. And that's what ended up being my DOC, was Xanax and cocaine, because I really liked the bar and nightlife, so if I did cocaine, I feel like I could get with any girl I wanted. I could make anything happen for me, you know, with the power of cocaine, which was just an disillusional bullshit idea that I got. So that all went on. I mean, that's just a slew of drugs. Oxycodone, cocaine, Xanax, that combo went down for quite a while. And then the criminal cases start coming along, you know. I got an aggravated assault, dropped down to a summary. Then I get, like a couple of months later, I get intimidation of a witness and terroristic threats, end up in jail for the second time. Only this time I'm facing, you know, 2 years of prison. And I'm 22 at the time, and I'm like, man, I just threw my whole life away. If this sticks, I'm completely burnt. I'm going to be sitting in jail at 22, facing 2 years with 2 felonies, and facing little to no hope of ever getting the kind of job I want again. Because, I mean, face it, you know, you got that little box, and you got to write if you got convicted of a felony, and who's going to hire a felon who just gets out of jail, you know, within like 12 months of them just getting out. And I couldn't imagine what 2 years of my life would be like behind bars. So the judge back in Pennsylvania called it divine intervention, because I wasn't going to stop unless something like this happened to me. He allows me to go to treatment. And I decide I'm going to go to treatment, and I have no idea what rehab's like. It's like such a negative word in my mind. Like, it's rehab, you know. It doesn't sound fun, you know. It doesn't sound like it's a good time. And I'm thinking, I don't even know how to describe what I was thinking. My thoughts were so sideways about what I was about to experience, and turns out it was nothing like that. I went to a pretty hardcore program in Pennsylvania called White Deer Run. It's like militaristic. You like have bunks and you have to stay with your unit and you can't talk to women, and it's very structured. Like, we did like 12 groups a day and like 18 roll calls and like 1 hour of gym time, and then you go to bed at 9 and you wake up at 6 a.m. and you do the same thing every day in the freezing cold mountains in the Poconos in PA. And man, I never once was like, I wish I was back in jail, but I definitely wished I was somewhere else. It was like, I was just coming off drugs. I was in jail for only 7 days before I went to treatment. So I was fresh, you know, I was a newcomer, and I wanted to get high. I wanted to get out of rehab and go and get high and pretend like none of it ever happened. It was to erase all my problems forever, you know, just so I could get out of these two felony threes. But luckily, the courts weren't having none of that. They wanted me in treatment for a long time, and they weren't even going to let me back in the county I was living in. So I knew I was going to have some spare time, so what I decided to do was get involved with the program of AA. You know, I was like, well, if I can't beat him, I might as well join him. And believe me, I fought it every part of the way, every step of the way. I questioned everything, the higher power. I questioned, what am I admitting I'm powerless over, drugs and alcohol? What if I can, you know, do them just sometimes or drink like a gentleman? You know, why do I need a sponsor? What's he going to tell me that I don't already know? You know, just things that I feel like a typical newcomer addict or alcoholic is going to say. You know, you don't, like, it's my first time in treatment. It's my first time trying to change myself. I'm not going to trust something because for the past 7 years of my life, nobody could trust me and I couldn't trust them. And like, I didn't have anything that worked for me besides drugs or alcohol. That's what I knew. That was what was ingrained in my body, you know? And the problem with that disease is that it makes you think it's working for you when it's really not. So it's just destroying everything around you. When I was getting high, I pointed fingers at everybody but me. And that's what AA taught me, is that it wasn't everybody else. It wasn't just the drugs or alcohol. It was me. There was something wrong with me, you know? And I don't even know what really motivated me. I guess, because I never felt like I hit my rock bottom. I never felt like I hit the lowest point in my life. I just knew that I couldn't live that way anymore because I was going to die. I mean, I wanted to die. And I had some real hardcore people in AA, because where I was at, it was a lot of AA purism, like, don't say you're an addict at a meeting mistakenly, you know, don't mention just for the days, don't mention any of that stuff, you know, because it's AA to the bone, to the very core. But that's what drilled in me the idea, if I use or drink, I will end up dead. You know, I needed that hardcore military type of thing to set my mind straight and get me right on the right path. And the thing was, is I was talking the talk of recovery, but I wasn't really doing the actions necessary to make me recover. I wasn't. I just wanted to fit in, like I've been trying to do my whole life. I just wanted to fit in with the people around me, you know? And I couldn't accept the idea that being 22, I'll never be able to drink again, you know? Because I just turned 21 like a year ago. My dad owns a bar, and I thought I was quite the party animal, you know? And I like socializing. And I didn't understand the idea of fun and recovery. That shit just didn't make any sense to me. Like, how can I have fun without drinking, you know, something? Or how can I have fun without not going to get an 8-ball of cocaine? Like, how does that work, you know? The idea doesn't register in your mind. You can't see anything without drugs or alcohol when you're that early in recovery, at least for me. I couldn't see that there was a promised land at the end of this, or there were gifts at the end of this that I would even care about, because all I gave one shit about was money and women, but I just wasn't happy with myself, so like the relationship things didn't seem important to me, you know. That kind of stuff didn't seem important. But the longer I applied myself, and eventually I get sent out to Las Vegas, you know, and I remember everything I learned in my first treatment center. So whenever I come to Solutions, it was just a great way for me to take all this hardcore stuff and then put it on top of the touchy-feely stuff, because I felt like Solutions really gave me that touchy-feely, you know, kind of recovery, you know. It wasn't like as hardcore as White Deer Run was, but it was a nice little break. So I get in there, and I'm thinking, like, this is crazy. There's women here, because I've been separated from women for a while, because that's just how White Deer Run did it, you know. They're letting other people say that there's other ways than AA or NA, which in my mind was also crazy, because that's all I've heard for the past, you know, 2 months. It was a lot. It was like more freedom, and I was like scared to have it because I've been in like institutionalized pretty much, you know, waking up in a bunk bed situation with like two other roommates and standing outside of my room, you know, telling them that I was gonna stay sober today versus, you know, a hotel room that I have a maid in, you know, that's crazy. That's a crazy difference, you know, and that really shocked me. But like I said, it was real touchy-feely. And the CEO there, Dave Marlin, that's the guy I really looked up to whenever I got into solutions. Because, I mean, this guy's walking in Italian suits with a smile on his face, you know. And he's making some money, and he's happy, and he's in recovery, you know. That's great. You know, that's great. That's what I looked up to. This is the guy I wanted to be. And the thing about recovery is to tell you to find someone who has more clean time than you, because you want to get a sponsor that has things that you want, you know. And that's something that I wanted. It wasn't just the material things. It was just the status and the way he felt and the way he looked and how happy he was with all this stuff. You know, I wanted the whole package of recovery. And that's when I started buying in. I'm like, you know what, I'm going to get this, or I'm either going to die or I'm going to get this. That's just how it was, you know. Because I have friends who didn't make it, and I don't want to end up like that. I don't want to see my dad in a courtroom ever again crying because his son's in an orange jumpsuit. I don't want to see my mom crying because her son's facing prison time or her son's acting like a maniac. I don't want to see that kind of stuff anymore. I want to be and live up to the potential that I know I have now because I know I'm capable of doing great things. Just by being in recovery and talking to people and hearing people say things about me, that feels good. It's a reaffirmation of my belief that I have the capabilities to do these things, you know. That's what recovery has given me, is confidence and the ability to help other people and the ability to see the message and see where my life can end up, you know. Because no matter who I've met in recovery, whether they're like me or they're not like me, they all share the same struggle of drug addiction or alcoholism, you know, so they can relate. So I can find people that can relate to me. You guys can find people that can relate to you, no matter where you come from, what walk of life you've been in, whether you're from the hood or you're from Beverly Hills, you know, you can find somebody that's going to help you, you know. There's hope out there. There's strength, there's courage. You can find that stuff in the rooms. That's what I found. What helped me was my connection to my higher power. Whenever I found God for the first time, again, because I'm a devout Catholic, my family's all Catholic, my grandparents are Catholic, my pap's actually a principal at a Catholic school. And when I got that back in my life, I'm saying this for me, not for anybody else, but when I got the higher power back in my life and started praying and started, you know, trying to do God's will, like it says in step number 3, that's when things really kicked off for me, and I've had nothing but peace and positivity for the first time in my entire life. Like, these 5 months compared to those past 7 years are by far better in every aspect than they were whenever I was in active addiction, you know. I'm not hurting people anymore. I'm not destroying things. I'm not burning bridges down. I'm not manipulating people. I'm not stealing anything, you know. I'm building a life for myself. I can finally be a member of society today. I can finally be happy. I can finally have a normal relationship with a girl or with my parents, you know. My brother and sister run up to me and say hi and that they love me instead of don't take my shit, you know. That's what it's like now, you know. It's positivity and happiness, and things are great. And I'm not trying to say I'm never going to run into problems again, because that's life, you know. Outside of recovery, it's just regular life. I'm still going to have somebody try and, you know, shit on me. Things are going to be thrown my way that I'm not going to like. It's not all sunshine and daisies, but if I don't use one today, you know, I know that I'll end up being okay. That's just something that I know, because I'm not masking my problems. I'm actually able to deal with them, because the moment I take something in me, it's not reality anymore. It's just bullshit, and I don't want any more bullshit in my life. I want the real things. You know, I want something I can grasp and actually see and believe in. I don't want an altered state of mind that's going to continue to destroy everything around me. I like where I'm at today. You know, I like where I'm at today. I have good people around me. I have a good support group. I have a great sponsor. You know, I've been through the 12 steps. I'm continuously doing them. And, like, it was hard for me to believe in any of this shit. Compared from day one to day 153, 154, it was really hard for me to see the light. But it's there, man. It's there. You just gotta keep coming back. And as corny as that saying sounds, I used to hate when people say that, but it's true. It's so true. The longer you stay involved, the more things are gonna happen for you. And it's a commitment for the rest of my life, you know. I'm committed to staying sober. And I am nothing in this is guaranteed to me, nothing. I just know if I put in the work, I'll make it. Whenever being in treatment for as long as I was able to, like, see the happiness of other people. And it's not even that I wanted that. I just wanted to fit in with them, you know. So, like, the whole fake it till you make it thing, you know, it's not like you're just BSing. You're adopting a lifestyle to try and become that way that you don't currently believe in, you know. It's like putting on a pair of size 12s when you're size 13 and stretching them out till they fit. That's what it was like for me, you know. And then eventually it's just stuck. Like, I wasn't just like one day. It wasn't like one day I was like, okay, I'm going to do recovery now, you know. It was like a gradual thing. But it was because I was in treatment for so long. And like I said, I was ordered to go by the court. So it wasn't like I hit my rock bottom. I just this became my life, you know. And I'm blessed for that. The first time I had fun in recovery was the one thing we had at White Deer was a volleyball court and a gym. And when you go with your unit, like, this is, like, one of the biggest rehabs in PA, so you're going to the gym with, like, 65 dudes, you know. It wasn't just, like, 10 or 20 people. So we would have volleyball tournaments and volleyball games and play against other units, you know. And we only had that for an hour a day. But you better believe that for those 23 hours, I was looking for that one just to go to the gym and have a good time, you know. That's when I found fun recovery because I wasn't high. No one around me was high. We were all sober, and we were all newcomers, and we were just playing volleyball and laughing and having a good time. And today, I do the same thing, man. I still play volleyball today because that's, like, where I found the fun of my sobriety. I play cards with other people. Like, I play spades. It's a jail game, but, I mean, it's still fun. I got an Xbox. I got a dog. I just do things that I would do whenever I was high that I used to think I couldn't do unless I was high. But now I can do them without being high, you know. Like, play Xbox or walk my dog or hang out with my family, you know, because that's it becomes fun. You have it just becomes that way, you know. Like, whenever I was getting high and, like, a new game would come out, right, I would go and buy it, and I might play it for about 10 minutes, and then I'd go and trade it and go buy drugs with it because I just couldn't I couldn't have fun if I wasn't high. But now I get excited by, like, the idea, like, of a new thing, you know. I get excited by the idea of a story that I can play through, of just the competition, like, the competitive nature of, like, sports. Like, those things excite me, and that's what I was excited about whenever I was, like, 16 before I did drugs, was the natural fun of things. And that's what I'm getting back now, is the natural fun you find in things. Oh, this is definitely one of the most important things in my recovery, without a doubt. I have friends that are hardcore that will tell you, don't use or you'll die, and that's, like, their primary message. And then I have friends that get behind the issue, and they're, like, behavioralists, you know. They find out, like, why you do things, you know. And it's just, it's crazy because I've surrounded myself with nothing but good people, and if they're not good for me, then they're not good for my recovery, and then simply put, they're out. I don't put myself in situations where I'm going to use, or at least I try not to. I don't, like, go to a, you know, future concert and, you know, hang out with that kind of crew because, you know, that's just an environment where you're going to do drugs and drink. I mean, it doesn't have to be that way, but for me, I'm early in my recovery and I don't want to put myself towards something like that. My support group is always there for me. You know, I found people that are winners that I can stick with, that I know are dedicated to their recovery, because I feel like to stay sober and to have fun and to live the life that you can see from people that have a lot of years, recovery has to be the number one thing on your mind. So above anything else, my support group has their recovery in mind. And that's why we all get along so well, you know. I think the first time I started helping people was at White Deer, and I did not want to be a good person. I kept telling myself I was a bad person. I kept telling myself I wasn't capable of helping other people, that I was an asshole. That's what I said. And it just didn't work out that way. I couldn't continuously be an asshole because that's kind of hard to do. So I started being nicer, and I started to feel better, you know. And you got to give it away to keep it. And that's a principle I live by on a daily basis. If there's any way I can help someone, I don't do it for them. I do it for me. And that might sound selfish, but if it's helping them and it's helping me, then it's a mutual benefit, you know. I do things because it helps me and it's my sobriety. I don't know how I just became that way. Maybe I never was a self-centered, selfless asshole. I just acted that way to get what I wanted, you know, because that was the driving force behind me stealing, was me trying to get that next one, you know. And now that that's out of my life completely and I have no desire at this point in time to use, and I love my sobriety, I don't have to be that kind of person anymore, you know? It's kind of like adopting a mask for the situation. That's how it was for that time period. I was a functioning addict for a while, and then I became a non-functioning addict. It's 100% different. I remember saying, sitting in my bed on a couple bars, saying I was hopeless, I wanted to die, my life sucked, everybody around me sucked, no one wants to help me, I can't get or keep a job for more than like 10 days, my dad didn't even want to hire me, you know. I felt like the world was out to get me, when that simply just wasn't how it was, you know. People just wanted to help me. My family just wanted to see me do better. And I realize now that whenever I was on drugs or alcohol, my life seemed so closed-minded. Like, I couldn't see more than 5 feet in front of me, you know? And anything that I saw looked like my misery. But now it's just limitless. Really, I can go anywhere I want in my sobriety. I can take it as far as I'd like to go. If you have the work ethic and the willingness to do something, you can literally do anything you want. Like, it's not like whenever you were a kid and they tell you if you want to be a, you know, like a space commander and fly a spaceship. It's not like that. But if you have the willingness to work and the drive to succeed, you can make it. And you acquire those things through sobriety. Like, I was the lowest of lowest drug addicts you could possibly find. I did not work. I slept in bed all day. I would just take Xanax to pass my days along. I wanted to die. My life sucked. That's what I was like. And now I'm nothing like that because of sobriety. Everything I owe to my higher power and to sobriety. That's what gives me this positivity, you know? I look forward to the next day, and I'm not talking about projecting, like, because it's just for today. Every day counts. But I'm excited to wake up. When I wake up in the morning, I'm excited because I know that if I go to meetings and if I do what I'm supposed to, I'm probably going to have a good day.